This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, we have Donna Stuckert with the Porter County Recycling and Waste Production to talk all things composting and a bit more. We'll also have another conversation from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University for you. And Susie Vance, who is with the Depot Museum and Art Gallery in Beverly Shores, will talk about their big fundraiser coming up next month. And we hope to have for you more about how the latest Urban League of Northwest Indiana's program went. Their Spring 2018 Diversity and Inclusion Luncheon was held recently in Merrillville. We'll find out more from Dr. Vanessa McLeod about that. And more coming up on Regionally Speaking. But first, the news. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Portage departments are working with the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction to set up a recycling of organics for this year. Donna Stuckert with the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction to tell us more about it. Donna, thanks for joining us today on Regionally Speaking.
No, thank you very much.
Well, if you will tell, now, first off here, we have some other things, some new things to bring up too, but let's talk here about composting because this is the time of year that we're dealing with that, of course. And tell us the latest arrangement that the district has set up with the City of Portage Street Department to give more people an opportunity to be able to recycle their organics.
Yes, well, as you know, the two public compost sites in Porter County, one in Valparaiso and one in Boone Grove, leave a little bit to be desired for those who like to compost in North Porter County. I mean, it's an awful long way to take your brush and your dead plants and stuff to compost. So the Portage Street Department has an agreement with Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction that is allowing all Porter County residents to be able to bring their yard waste and their tree branches and, you know, when they're cleaning up their yard, their dead plants and stuff to bring their yard waste to the Portage Street Department to drop off. Mm-hmm. And also, as they're sprucing up their yard, they can take compost and mulch anytime. So it's exciting. It's a great way for people in North Porter County to be able to have access to those same kind of services that we offer in Valparaiso and Boone Grove.
Are these basically the same types of materials that have been dropped off at the other Porter County composting operations for being chopped up and then put out on the compost piles?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, Christmas time, I don't even want to say that, but come Halloween time, because I'm not sure they're going to be open in December, but like Halloween time, they can bring their pumpkins and their gourds and all of those kinds of things as well. It's a great way for them to be able to compost and maintain their yards, and it's great for the environment, of course.
Now, how long has the work been underway to work with the City of Portage Street Department to get this set up?
I honestly don't know. I know that they have been working on getting their compost site publicly accessible, but because that has taken some time, we have worked out a deal with them where they're allowing their street department to be accessible for those same reasons. Yeah. So until their compost site is available to the public, we think that this is still a great service for those who live in North Porter County.
Now, speaking of the compost sites, let's talk about the public compost sites that are open in Porter County. They're open, I guess, now. They opened up this week, didn't they, for the public to be able to bring material over?
Yes, absolutely. They opened on Monday, so they are officially open for the season. They're open 6 days a week, and bring when you're doing your yard cleanup, bring us your yard waste, and there's mulch and compost for anybody who's interested.
Now, the hours for the, by the way, let's get the hours out here for the folks that aren't aware of them. The two sites, the Valparaiso and the Boone Grove sites, are open separate times, I guess. They're pretty close to the same time, but they are open certain days more often than others. I guess they're at the Valparaiso site, right?
Yes, well, you're right. The Valparaiso compost site is open from 9 to 5 Mondays through Fridays and from 9 to 4 on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And the Boone Grove site is open from noon to 5 on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays and from 9 to 4 on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm. Now, these are rather large composting operations, and so you get to be able to really take in a lot more material that's out there at the drop-off sites than the out in Valparaiso and out in the country there at Boone Grove. I imagine that even for the folks in Portage, but it gives Portage people an opportunity to be able to bring things over and still have some place to bring their materials that can be composted.
Yes, absolutely. Because sometimes, you know, Valparaiso is just a little too far to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's much more convenient in Portage for our North Porter County residents.
We're talking with Donna Stuckert with the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction. I hear about the composting operations that are open now. I keep forgetting to ask it every time we get together and talk about this. What happens to the compost that gets, or the material, I should say, that gets dropped out at the composting sites? How is it handled out there? And this way it gets turned into material that homeowners can go out and pick up as finished compost.
Well, yes. At Valparaiso and Boone Grove, a lot of what is there is leaf material from the season before.
Mm-hmm.
So those are brought in specifically, like, for, it's the Valparaiso compost site. It is owned by the city of Valparaiso. We help manage the material, which also allows the Valparaiso compost site to be accessed by anybody in Porter County. So you don't have to live in Valparaiso to use the Valparaiso compost site. But a lot of what's there are the leaves that are collected from a lot of Valparaiso residents, in addition to people that are trucking them in and stuff. And that's, you know, your dead plants and all of that stuff are put into windrows. And the Recycling and Waste Reduction District manages that, and we go through that and kind of aerate it so it gets water, it gets air, and slowly it decomposes so that the following season it becomes this wonderful soil amendment and natural fertilizer.
Yeah.
So It's great for gardens and plants and, you know, inside and outside. So and it's accessible to anybody who lives in Porter County.
Now, at the Boone Grove site, is it pretty much the same there? Maybe not quite as many leaves as what you would expect to get there at Valparaiso, because you're right in the city and you have all of the residents that have leaves. And, of course, the street department will go around and pick up leaves up too, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And I believe either Hebron or Couts brings their leaves to Boone Grove. So
yeah,
there's still quite a bit of material that's brought in there. So there's a good quantity of compost that's available.
I also know, too, that at the public composting sites, the one there on Lincoln Way in Valparaiso and the one out at Boone Grove on 550 South, they also accept for proper disposal some material that's usually not taken out to a composting site. But in turn, I know that now that this is the time of year, we have decent weather, we're going to be getting our household hazardous waste collection program underway, too. First, tell us about the schedule for folks that have materials like in the garage or the basement or the shed they need to get rid of, and it's not what you can put in the trash.
That's right. We just announced our household hazardous waste collection schedule, and this is for material that's, you know, left over in your basement or in your garage, and after a while, you forget exactly what it is. It's old pesticides, it's old gasoline, it's oil, and we say that it's anything that's corrosive, toxic, ignitable, or contains reactive ingredients. And those are the kinds of things that we accept at our household hazardous waste schedule, or at our household hazardous waste collections, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them are open from 9 to 2 p.m. on these dates. At the Porter County Expo Center, we've got two of them on Saturdays, May 12th and October 6th. At Portage High School, we've got two on June 16th and August 4th. And at in Chesterton at Westchester Intermediate School, we've got one on July 7th. And at Coutts Middle / High School, we've got one on July 28th. And again, those are from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And we encourage all Porter County residents to bring all of those old pesticides and gasoline and anything that you do not want to put that down the drain or sewer or on the ground because it can be toxic and really bad for the environment. We will collect that kind of stuff and dispose of it properly.
And I know, too, as an incentive, that is, if you happen to be at the first-come, first-served basis, if you have old gasoline cans, you have a way to be able to turn those back in and get some new ones that are a little more environmentally friendly, too, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. And those are on a first-come, first-served basis, and those are compliments of Northwest Indiana Clean Air. So we thank them for their supply that they give us every year.
Okay. Now, obviously, if anybody wants more information, we've just kind of mentioned the dates briefly and the locations briefly for the household has this waste collection schedule. But you can go on PorterCountyRecycling.org and find out more information, right?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
All right. One last thing. We talk here about dealing with household hazardous waste, but there is one kind of waste that is not hazardous. It's something that's really more reusable than it is the kind of thing that you do necessarily put in the trash, and that's paint. Tell us about the latest project that you folks have been able to work with some residents and organizations in Porter County to be able to take advantage of that recycled paint.
Yes, we've had an agreement with the City of Hobart for a couple of years where they are taking accepting usable but unwanted latex paint from residents in Porter County.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have that and you just don't like that color or you used up as much as you wanted and you don't want it anymore, you can take that to the City of Hobart and they will take that and they will mix that with other donations that have been brought in, and they create what's considered recycled latex paint.
Uh-huh.
And it's a neutral color. It's when you think of it, it's combination of every color that's been brought in and every type of latex paint that's out there. So it's kind of a gray / beige color. So, and it's absolutely free to government and nonprofit organizations. And it's only $3 a gallon for anybody else. And any resident can purchase it. And nonprofit and government organizations, please go and use it. Now, the Portage Township YMCA is a great example of an organization that's been using it, and they are giving their facility a beautiful facelift with recycled latex paint. And they've changed their facility from these bright colors that were really in years and years ago, mm-hmm, to a very nice, clean, neutral color. So if you have the chance, stop by there and see what they've done with their facelift.
Now, once again, you mentioned that these donations of paint cans with paint still in them coming in from Lakin, from Porter Counties, are being taken over into Hobart. If anybody is interested in getting the finished product, how can they find out more about that now?
Yes, well, they can certainly jump on our website, PorterCountyRecycling.org, or they can visit the City of Hobart's website for hours and accessibility, because that is in their city, their public works department. And they sell it on certain days, and they don't sell it on others, and they collect other days, too. So we can certainly direct them from our website, PorterCountyRecycling.org.
Donna Stuckert is with Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction, filling us in the latest on the resumption of composting operations since it's springtime now, and what to plan ahead as well for household hazardous waste collection, the sites, and what's taken in there. And you can go, as you say, go on to PorterCountyRecycling.org. And find out more about that as well, too. Donna, as always, thank you for spending time with us today to talk about this, and we'll check back in with you soon.
Sounds great, Chris. Thank you.
This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
I took music lessons from a guy that lived in downtown Gary, so I had to get on the bus and go to downtown Gary. Gary, from the steel mills till about 9th Avenue, almost 100% white. The downtown shopping area, which went from about 4th and Broadway till 9th Avenue, that was a mixed area, very commingled down there, no big deal. But when you pass the Little Calumet River, which was around 30th Avenue, it was almost 100% black. And my bus went down Grant Street, and it was a kind of a ghetto, if you want to call it that. It just looked rough to me. Yeah, I was anxious. I don't know why I was anxious. I guess everything just looked so distressed. It kind of scared me. I think that I honestly believed that there was just a cultural difference, that this is the way black people lived as opposed to the way white people lived. But I do have to tell you one story. I had taken the bus down to get my trumpet lesson. And apparently, when I was sitting in the bus, somehow my 15 cents to get home fell out of my pocket. Now, I could have asked my instructor for 15 cents, but about that time, I was getting a little bullheaded. So I walked home through the heart of the black neighborhood. I was scared to death. I don't think I thought the black people liked the white people. But you know what? Even though I was carrying a trumpet, something somebody could have clobbered me over the head and stole, nobody said a word to me. That walk convinced me that these people aren't evil or demons or out to pick on white people. They didn't even look at me funny. It was kind of like I just walked on home. And I think that kind of changed my view on how things were. Like, hey, it really would be okay to go down there. But I think I felt like maybe a little bit of me said, boy, you really dodged a bullet getting through that, you know, without getting beat up or something like that. But, you know, but on the other hand, I think it did change me a little bit. I think if I ever saw a black person walking through Glen Park, that I would go out of my way to make sure that person got safely past my neighborhood.
You can find out more stories on the website, Welcome Project, that's one word, .valpo.edu. The Depot Museum and Art Gallery is located inside the South Shore train station in Beverly Shores. They've been around in the community for quite a while. In fact, they're being able to celebrate that longevity with a special event coming up here in early May. And let's turn now to Susie Vance at the Depot Museum and Art Gallery to tell us more about it. Susie, thanks for joining us here on Regionally Speaking.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Well, first take some time, if you will, tell us a little bit about how the Depot Museum and the Art Gallery got started.
Well, the Depot Museum and Art Gallery didn't exist before 1998. The building itself was built in 1929 and housed the station master that lived in it and operated the train station until 1988, when the last station master died or moved out, and the building was scheduled for demolition, just like the other building in Beverly Shores at Central Street, another station had been torn down.
Yeah.
And people rallied and rescued this building over the next 10 years, restoring it to its original shape. And in 1998, the town and NCDI and NIPSCO and everybody had collaborated, and they created the Depot Museum and Art Gallery. It houses the art, the history of the town, and has turned into a regional art gallery.
If somebody came by to the museum proper, and what would they likely see there?
Oh, they would. It's open from May through October,
mm-hmm.
and there are every month there is a different artist or group of artists that come and exhibit their things, their works of art. It can be anything from some photography to statuary, ceramics, glasswork, fiber work, paintings, anything that's artistic, you name it.
Now let's fast forward to May 11th, which is a Friday, and there's going to be a special event happening there at the depot in the art gallery, which is called 5x5 at the Depot. How did the project get started?
Well, the project got started because we stole an idea from another museum out west
mm-hmm.
that had created a fundraiser. And, you know, we're always trying to support our programs and different things, and we don't always have the money we need, so we need to do fundraising. We're a nonprofit organization, a 501c3. And we got this idea and decided that we would ask artists in the region to contribute. All the proceeds of this sale will be going to support the depot and the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
But every item is going to be literally 5 inches by 5 inches by 5 inches by 5 inches.
Wow. How interesting. That's a good way to put it. That's very interesting. Now, how many artists have signed up for this effort?
Well, we have so far well more than 45, and we're hoping for 55 because uh-huh. we want to celebrate the 5x5.
That would be very nice too. Now, these are artists, I would imagine, of all types of media, as well as all ages, I would imagine.
All ages, absolutely. There are people who are well established in their career, and there are some people that are just emerging artists.
Mm-hmm.
But every single one of them is contributing at least one, and maybe more than one. So there will be plenty of art for everyone at an affordable price. Each item will go for $55, and before the event, we're asking, and you can even the day of the event, we're asking people to buy what we call claim tags. Each of them are for $55. There won't be any more claim tags sold than artwork, but you show up with your claim tag when the doors open and you rush in, finders keepers,
mm-hmm.
and you claim your piece of art.
Is this an idea that came about for this particular way of starting off the buying process from this event out west that you all borrowed?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, that's interesting.
And it worked so well for them, we thought, hey, we could try it here in the Midwest.
We're talking with Susie Vance, who is with the Depot Museum and Art Gallery, which is located in Beverly Shores. They have a big event coming up here on May 11th called the 5x5 at the Depot. And Susie, I understand that some visitors pretty much have their minds made up, I guess, on what particular types of art or pieces of art they may be interested in.
Oh, yes, but they better get their claim tags early.
Yeah.
And I do have to say that it's not just open to people who come in with claim tags. Anybody can view this opening, view the art in this space from that day, the 11th, through the 20th.
Now, we're focusing here in particular on this particular event, the 5x5 at the Depot, which is coming up here and on May 11th. Are there any other programs that the Depot Museum and the Art Gallery likes to promote, like to support? And they're hoping to support, of course, with the proceeds from this particular event.
Yes, and we do have other artists that are scheduled to appear over the next, up and through October. There
mm-hmm.
will be groups of artists in some cases and one particular artist in another. Each month, sort of, we change and have a new rendition, a new exhibit. We also have a lovely small shop in there where you can buy wonderful, we curate it so you don't get junk. We have beautiful little artistic things that are available in the shop as well.
Now, if anybody who's interested in art and doing art, and we're talking about all types of artists and all ages of artists involved in this project, if they're interested in getting involved in 5x5 of the Depot, they have time still to do so. If they get right to it, what do they need to do and who do they need to contact?
They can contact me at 219-229-1483. They can go on to the website called The Depot MAG.org and sign up. They can do it many different ways. Please feel free to do that. We'd love to have, even 100 artists.
Oh, that's right. I mean,
should only have a problem like that.
you're not restricted to 55, although that's a nice goal to have, to be sure, but you can certainly do well beyond that. That would be wonderful for this particular event.
Right. And I need to say that the Depot is regularly open between May 1st or May 4th this year and October on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Its regular hours are from 11 to 3.
We've been talking with Susie Vance, who is with the Depot Museum and Art Gallery in the Beverly Shores. The Museum and Art Gallery is sponsoring a fun night and fundraising for the operation of the Depot. It's called 5x5 at the Depot. It's coming up on Friday, May 11th. And if you'd like more information, you can always go to the website, too, and find out more about this particular event. Susie, thank you very much for spending time with us today. And best of luck to you and everybody involved in the project. And hope you get that 100 participants in this that you're hoping for. You never know. You never know what can happen.
That's right. Thank you so much.
This is Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The 6th Annual Diversity and Inclusion Awards Luncheon for the Urban League of Northwest Indiana held last Thursday at Avalon Manor here in Merrillville. And with us in the studio, we have the President and CEO of the Urban League of Northwest Indiana, Dr. Vanessa McLeod, with us. And on the phone from his office at Tradewinds Center, wherever that may be, at some undisclosed location, I think as they like to put it that way, we have John Gold with us. John is going to be with us, and we'll explain why he is going to be on the phone in this conversation in just a moment. Dr. McLeod, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much.
We know that a lot of work goes into the luncheon itself to be able to put out the opportunity for folks to have applied for these awards.
Yes.
First, we've gone through this before in our last conversation, but let's recap what the awards are that so many people have decided they want to apply for this year.
Yes, it's interesting that people have really, really supported the Urban League in terms of identifying diversity and inclusion in the workplace, in the community, and in leadership. We've had several winners over the years. Organizations, whether they are large or whether they are small, have submitted those applications, and we have a very diverse committee, mm-hmm. that reviews those applications and select the winners. And then we surprise them the day of the luncheon. Or at least we try to surprise them.
You probably generally can, unless somebody sneaks the word out and they kind of lets people know ahead of time.
Exactly.
I know that sometimes some organizations they want to be sure to get the right people to show up for the whatever function they're doing there. They'll simply say maybe you should be sure to have somebody there.
And that is true. But I'm so thankful that the people that won and the people that submitted applications, they usually come to the luncheon.
Mm-hmm.
They have been a part of the luncheon and they submitted their application. So I was so glad. Plus, what I did was I invited one of the groups. They have a choir called Achieve and Believe. That's the Tradewinds Services Choir.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. A group of customers at the Tradewinds Services. It was about, I'll say, 15 of them. They kicked off the celebration with the national anthem. They came with their walkers, their canes, whatever. They had their music director, Annette Walker, in front, and that really set the tone because it's all about diversity. It's not just ethnicity, but it's also diversity in being able.
Before we get to the award categories, and then we'll finally get to talk with John Gold, his participation in the luncheon this year, let's talk about what Dr. Tony Lux, the retired school superintendent here in Lake County, had to say. He was the keynote speaker this year.
He was the keynote speaker, and I'm very honored and humbled that he had time to come. You know, he's retired, and sometimes people work harder in retirement than they do when they're actually the superintendent. But Tony Lux gave us an overview of when he came into the Maryville school system back maybe 25, 30 years ago, and how the school district was possibly 80% Caucasian, 10% minority. Mm-hmm. And by the time he left, those numbers had flipped. Mm-hmm. It was more like 60, 70, 80% minority and 10% Caucasian or mainstream. And he talked about some of the resistance in the community that he had to work with in terms of expectations. And it turns out that Dr. Lux demonstrated to us that in the time that there was an infusion of the ethnicities around the community, when he had a more diverse school system, their test scores shot up tremendously above any other year in the history of his tenure. And it shows that there is power in diversity. And he's a leader in order to make that happen. Tony just didn't do that by himself. He had a wonderful, outstanding teacher staff, counseling staff, and people working together with him. So he laid that out, and he let us know it's not about Democrat or Republican or Baptist or Pentecostal or whatever. He said it's about being together, mm-hmm, and working together for a common cause.
That's interesting. Well, let's talk now a little bit about the award categories and, yes, how they're set up here, and then we'll bring John Gold into the conversation here too. Let's go through the category listing here, please.
Category listing: we have a community impact award, we have a leadership award, workforce, a youth award, and a lifetime achievement award, which is something new that we had. We give that to one individual that the community feels is acknowledged. And then we have the Moving the Needle Award, which encompasses all of that. Mm-hmm. The organization that wins that Moving the Needle Award, they have done an exceptional job of being in the community, being leaders, and having a very good and diverse workforce. And guess who that went to this year?
Who? That would be Tradewind Services.
That would be Tradewind Services.
And let's bring John Gold, yes, who's the executive director of Tradewind Services, with us now. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and I'm not hiding anywhere. I'm really not that far away from you, quite honestly.
Well, that's what I understand. Yeah, you're kind of here in the neighborhood, I know. Tell us first a little bit about Tradewind Services and how it felt it was certainly well-qualified to be able to apply for this particular award. And did you happen to, I guess, along the way, and even in recent years, get some of the other awards in past years from the Urban League of Northwest Indiana?
I mean, I think we've had some awards. We like to be good partners to the whole community because I think that's important. So, yes, I think we have had in the past, but Vanessa's right about this award. I was very surprised, and we're very honored by the award. I don't think it's been given for probably about 5 years.
You're right, John. Mm-hmm. In fact, as he walked to the podium, you could look at him and tell that he was shocked that he was coming to get this large plaque and this award being bestowed on him. And while his people were cheering, you know, there was about three tables of Tradewinds in the audience. So they were cheering, and the video came on the screen, and John just walked up there like, I don't believe this.
Now, video is an interesting point, too, because I know that's part of the application process, is it not? So what did Tradewind Services do in putting in the application for the awards that apparently everybody seemed to like that video a lot?
John, I think you started, yeah, by opening up, didn't you?
Yeah, we have a video that kind of I start. You know, for a history of Tradewinds, we had a facility in Gary for 45 years, and it was a fantastic run for us. But we were kind of in a residential neighborhood, so 4 years ago we moved out to our new facility. And again, we're not hiding. We're very visible. Anybody listening, you want to take a tour, we would love to show you around. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I kind of introduced the video, and then it just showed all the different programs. And we dabble in a lot of things. And the great thing was a lot of the consumers that were singing in the choir were in the video. So, you know, I think people thought they were all cheering for me. And
they were really cheering for themselves, weren't they?
They were cheering for themselves,
yeah.
And I was really surprised. I guess I should have looked at the program a little closer while I was sitting there waiting, and then maybe I wouldn't have been quite so surprised. But, Yeah, it was a really nice event, and we were honored to participate and get this award.
Now, John, in your daily operations there at Tradewind Services, is there anything in particular that you feel that you and the staff and people who participate in the programs do to be able to earn such an award for diversity and inclusion?
We probably have a little bit of an advantage because our mission really relates to serving people who are historically excluded from a lot of things. Mm-hmm. When they shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And our mission is to make sure that people with disabilities are treated fairly and integrated into the community. So we start with our mission, kind of focuses on that. But I mean, I'm proud of what we do, and it's a great organization. I've been here a long time. If it wasn't, they would have probably asked me to leave a long time ago, or I wouldn't be here because, you know, your job takes up a lot of your time.
But I'm sorry, John, for just cutting in, but before I knew what Tradewinds did, I would see Tradewinds customers in places like Strachan Van Til's. Mm-hmm. When we needed some block club signs, when the Urban League needed some signage to go up in the community, we went to Tradewinds. I don't think a lot of people know that Tradewinds has a sign shop. You know, it's really amazing. John, tell us about that sign shop you have.
We do so many things, and for example, the sign shop. We started as a program for kids with disabilities. Over the years, we've expanded to adults with disabilities, and then we have residential services and production areas. The sign shop, we make signs just like a commercial business. We produce quality work. Mm-hmm. We have competitive prices, and people with disabilities are learning a trade and getting paid a fair wage for doing that. So that is one of our programs. We have a very large production area where we sew garments for the Department of Defense, and the diversity and inclusion really permeates in that program because we probably have half of that staff are from Middle Eastern descent. We probably need about 10 different interpreters to make sure that the communication is right. We have people from so many walks of life around here. So and just in all of our programs, it's just kind of a culture. And I really, like I say, I think it's because our mission is to help people with disabilities mm-hmm. who aren't normally included. So it's kind of just our philosophy.
Now, John, you mentioned about the opportunity to be able to tour the facilities. Where is Tradewind Center located?
Mm-hmm. We are at 3198 East 83rd Place. So if you get to the intersection of Route 30 in Colorado mm-hmm. and go one block south, you will see us. Mm-hmm. Our growth since we've been here is probably 40%, just because it's just such a great location.
I've been past the building. Yes, it's very nice.
Yes,
very impressive building.
It's beautiful.
Well, John Gold, thank you very much for spending some time with us here and telling us about Tradewind Services and the events and opportunities that you're giving community in Northwest Indiana and people in particular that need that extra boost to be able to deal with life and give them a good chance to have a good start in a very productive workplace life as well, too. Mm-hmm. And once again, congratulations for picking up the Moving the Needle Award.
Thank you. We were very honored with that.
Dr. McLeod here, we mentioned there's a community award and a youth award. And tell us who the recipients for this year happen to be.
The community award went to Gary's Miller Spotlight. Gary Miller Spotlight has done a lot of work throughout the communities in trying to economic development and redevelopment in certain areas. Also, they won that award. And then HASS Academy, which stands for Hammond Academic of Science and Technology out of Hammond. Mm-hmm. They won the Youth Award. The principal leader there is Dr. Sean Egan. They submitted their information, and they're doing phenomenal work over there in Hammond. So as you can see, we had some awards in Hammond. We had some over in Lake County and over in Gary. We just spread the love out to those organizations that submitted those applications and their videos.
Mm-hmm. I know that Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. oftentimes talks about the Hammond Academy of Science and Technology. He's very proud of the organization and of the students that attend the classes and all, and he feels very, very positive about the the outcome of some of these young people who are taking the classes, and they're going to have some great careers looking forward
they
to them.
Are.
And I know that not all of them are going to college, but a lot of them will be getting involved in various programs.
But whether you go to college or whether you go into a trade, what was striking about them is they have like a 95 to 100% graduation rate.
Yeah.
So, and these students, they, you know, they're selected through some type of lottery. You know, they have a lot. So, you're just all mixed in with whoever comes. They're able to work with those students, and they have like a 90. I don't want to misquote, but I know it's above 95%, 98% graduation rate, and that is outstanding.
That's very good
for the work that they do over there. So we're very proud, and we're very thankful. And Urban League is just another vessel in the community. We serve Lake, Porter, and LaPorte counties. I'm not sure if you realize that, but we are in the three counties, and we continue this. This is our sixth year, and the next activity that's coming up would be in November, which would be our Diversity and Inclusion Symposium, where we have breakout sessions and workshops where people come and have conversations about moving the needle and about community and about how to improve diversity in the workplace and how to identify more diverse workers in their employment agency. So look out for us in November.
Dr. Vanessa McLeod is president and CEO of the Urban League of Northwest Indiana. The Urban League just held their sixth annual Diversity and Inclusion Awards Luncheon. That happened on Thursday, the 22nd of March at Avalon Manor here in Merrillville. And Dr. McLeod, thank you for spending time with us to talk about the programs, in particular about the awards that were handed out. And our thanks as well, too, to John Gold, who's the executive director of the Tradewind Center here in Northwest Indiana, and how the center and all of the people who participate in the program and the staff at the center have certainly earned the honor of the award that they picked up this particular year, which is one award called Moving the Needle.
Moving the Needle, and they are moving the needle. You should go visit them. It's a very, very beautiful place.
Well, Dr. McLeod, thanks for visiting us today.
Thank you, Chris.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. For many students here in Northwest Indiana in the school district's spring break, Monday through Friday of this week was the opportunity for youngsters to kind of enjoy themselves, and they're away from classes for a few days. But it's made a lot of work for some people in addition to for people taking the break. A group called Team Combat, which is a laser tag organization here in Northwest Indiana, is very busy this week on a number of things, and they kind of blend together a major project that they're doing, cooperating with Munster-based Humane Indiana. And we have with us from the Team Combat, Jack Sweats with us. Jack, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, first, for people that are not familiar with the organization, tell them what Team Combat's all about.
Well, we are a tactical laser tag facility. So laser tag is all we do. And we are more than just running around with a laser tag phaser. We are all team-based, mission-based, long session gaming. So it's just a ton of fun, gets you off the couch and into the game.
Now, how did that you all get involved in this project with Humane Indiana? And tell us more about what you were doing during this spring break week.
Yeah, we're always looking for ways to partner with the community. We have a variety of donation programs and fundraising programs. So any nonprofit in the community that would like to reach out to us, we'd be happy to work with them on some level. Mm-hmm. But Humane Society is one of the organizations that's pretty popular with all of our staff here. And so we reached out to them and said, hey, how can we work together? And they suggested that we collect blankets and towels for use in the kennel for all the animals that are there, for the cats and dogs especially. So we jumped at that and said, hey, that sounds like a great idea.
Now, I was going to say, how did you find out about the wish list that Humane Indiana has set up?
So when we reached out to them and said, what could we do? They said blankets and towels, because those are actually not on the wish list. And then they said they have some other specific items on the wish list, some treats and foods and toys and things like that, that people can bring in as well this week, and we'd be happy to give them a pretty substantial discount on a session here to play on our laser tag.
Yeah. I know that my family has been very much involved over the years with Humane Indiana. They've followed through on many of the items on the wish list because they know that the Humane Indiana shelter operation in Munster always needs certain things to take care of the dogs and the cats and the other animals that are in the shelter. And they also, with their resale shop, they are always looking for supplies to keep the place clean and well-stocked. So they're pretty busy trying to fill that wish list on a regular basis. And I imagine that this is a good way to be able to add to something that is, not, as you said, not necessarily on the list, but is very much wanted and needed by the shelter.
Absolutely. And we're excited to partner with them to help fill the needs there.
Now, if anybody would like to take a look at the list, by the way, too, give us the website for Humane Indiana and where they can take a look at that. And if they want to help fill some of these wish list items, they can do so, in addition to offering up the opportunity to bring in a used towel or a used blanket or other item like that.
Yeah, so for the drive for this week, they would bring that here to our facility, which is at 8183 Grand Boulevard. So we're just east of Albany's Candy Factory at the next traffic light. You turn right, and we're right there. And if you're from the region, it's the old 84 Lumber Building. And that's where we are. So we'll be taking donations throughout this week through close of business Friday. We also open every day at 2 p.m. This week for the spring break event. But then to get to the Humane Society's wish list, just go to humaneindiana.org. And you can follow a link right on their homepage to their wish list items. And there's a whole bunch of variety of things that you can do. Any one of those items can be brought to our facility this week as a donation.
Now, I know that you and your staff are probably busy, of course, setting up activities there, connected with Team Combat. But you always have a little more time to take in the donations, especially this week.
Absolutely. And obviously, for every item you bring in, we're giving you $5 off one of our 40-minute-long laser tag sessions.
Wow. And
so minimum age to play here is 10 years old, but we have a ton of fun. And like I said, it is team-based and a very active way to get out of the cold, rainy weather this week.
Jack Schwetz is with Team Combat, which, as we mentioned, is a laser tag group here in Northwest Indiana. And this week, during what's considered spring break week for many area school districts, they're partnering with the Munster-based Humane Indiana to be able to offer an opportunity where residents can bring in a used towel or blanket or some other item that happens to be on the Humane Society's wish list that they happen to need on a regular basis. And you'll get a benefit for a great activity there at the laser tag facility. Jack, thank you for telling us about this. We appreciate it. We hope you get lots of towels and lots of blankets coming in, and in turn, that's going to go directly to the Humane Society and be able to help the Humane Indiana operations with something that they desperately need out of the shelter. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, thank you, Chris, and we hope to bring them more than they need.
That's what the idea is, certainly, to be sure. Thanks for talking with us today.
Yep, have a great day.
Thank you. If you have some expensive wine recently for a party and didn't finish the bottle, Ryan Fredrickson has an invention that might save some time and the wine and some money from evaporating away. He's created a spray preservative, and he talked with us here on Regionally Speaking about it.
Like you said, I was an engineer in the Argonne industry, was traveling around quite a bit, almost like a corporate contractor for a company that was one of the largest inert gas companies in the world, and really got a chance and a taste for wine, but I was, you know, traveling, living alone, and noticed that it, as much as wine is great, you know, the taste, the aromas, and if you go out to the West Coast like I did, you get to see kind of the beauty of the vineyards and all the hard work that goes into every drop of wine. But at the end of the day, you're staring at five glasses in a single bottle of wine. You kind of have to commit to the whole bottle if you don't want any of it to go to waste. So I kind of thought about that. You know, we were designing oxidation prevention systems for the food and wine industry, and kind of got to thinking, you know, maybe I could use my skills to actually, you know, decrease the waste. There was we did some research, and it was about $1.5 to $2 billion of wine is going down the drain every year, which is, you know, besides being good wine, which is unfortunate, it's something that I wanted to prevent. You know, it's something that I thought I could prevent.
What a fantastic waste of wine, to be sure. Well, what do you think about the, obviously there've been inventions in the past coming up with ways to cork up a bottle of wine to keep the freshness in there. What do you think about all these other gadgets and devices that have been put out there already to try to preserve the freshness of wine, and what was it that made you feel that you could do one better with your invention?
A lot of need, so there's always going to be lots of people trying to solve the problem. We did look at some of the things out there. You know, there's systems up to a couple $1,000s that will preserve wine, and there have been some attempts using nitrogen gas, actually, that were similar to ours. And based on my background, I said, you know, nitrogen's just not the right gas to use. For an application like this, we should definitely use argon. It's going to work better for our customers, and we're going to actually be able to preserve wine a lot better. So It kind of, you know, it was a hard question to answer for myself, is what makes me think. Eventually, you got to say, what makes me better? And I think it was just a true desire to reduce waste, starting with wine, and my background designing systems that prevent oxidation, that kind of hit the points on the head, I suppose.
Now, if somebody's interested in getting in ART Wine Preservers, first off, what does ART stand for?
Don't make fun of me. I'm an engineer first, right? ART stands for argon technology.
Well, I mean, you had to ask the question because, you know, it just makes sense that an engineer is going to come up with an idea first and they're going to find some way to if you can, put that into the name of your product, because then you always have to market the product, and that's the important thing now. If somebody wants to get this ART Wine Preserver, what are they going to have in their hand once the package arrives from wherever it comes from, and what can they do to help preserve the wine once they have that in hand?
To answer the first question, where, you know, it comes from Chicago suburbs. We manufacture every single piece here in the USA, and most of it actually locally. The Chicago suburbs, there's a great manufacturing group out there that does a good job. In terms of what it is, to visualize it for our customers, basically it's a small canister, very similar to like a miniature version of what we were using in the food industry for our, you know, your Kraft, your Purdue chicken, that sort of thing. Very, very similar to that. It's basically an aerosol can that is pure argon gas. Spray 2 seconds of this gas into your open bottle of wine. That's the dose we figured out that will create a protective layer over the wine within the open bottle. Then you stick a cork in it, and you're good for a couple of weeks.
That's great. That's great. Now, how has your marketing plan been going so far now to get this out so that more people have a chance to examine it and find out more and see if it really does make them feel happy about opening a bottle of wine?
The first place we've been going is wine professionals. So your sales teams, for distributors, your vineyards, that they're really concerned about their brand, and that every single drop of the wine that they're serving is at its peak. So we have we've talked with salespeople that have they're sampling bottles to their customers and trying to get them to buy a pallet of this stuff. So they really want it to be perfect, and they're some of the they're some of the quickest to dump a bottle of wine. So our marketing plan actually is to target these wine professionals, get them to really test it out in the field a lot every single day. And that's been pretty successful.
That's Purdue University graduate and inventor Ryan Fredrickson, who is the creator of a wine-preserving spray. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.